Well, you're probably familiar with school bans on certain foods or peanut-free flights on airlines. Such restrictions can be annoying, but for those who suffer from food allergies, limiting certain foods can be a matter of life or death. And even though we've come a long way in understanding food allergies, more and more kids are being diagnosed with them. Joining us are, as part of our regular children's development series, are two physicians, Dr. Chitra Dinakar, who's a pediatric allergy and immunology physician at Children's Mercy Hospital. She's also a professor of pediatrics at the UMKC School of Medicine. And Dr. Dinakar, so good to have you here. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
And joining us again, as she regularly does, is Dr. Natasha Burgert with Pediatric Associates of Kansas City. And Natasha, nice to have you again.
Great. Welcome. Great to be back. Hi, Steve.
Dr. Dinakar, why are food allergies increasing? What's going on out there?
That's a great question, Steve. That's puzzling a lot of us. Many theories abound regarding why. We think right now that it might be, to loosely put it, a consequence of 5 Ds: dry skin, diet, dog, dribble, and vitamin D.
Dog, so, dribble, define some of these. Dogs are causing this?
No, we think dogs might be protective. And that's something we're exploring because...
You lost me there. Dogs are protective. What do you mean?
Early exposure to a pet such as a dog at home might actually help you not have the food allergies, or and because the not because the dog allergen is protective, you can develop an allergy there, but because the bugs on the dog or the microorganisms on the dog may help you develop more a pro-inflammatory type of reaction rather than allergic response.
Well, we talk a lot on this show about why dogs are superior to cats. Now we have one more reason. Do I have that right, doctor?
Well, unfortunately, we haven't proven that with cats yet. But yeah, dogs do carry a lot of germs on their skin, which if you relate well to them, actually helps us not develop that many allergies.
And what was this thing about dribble? What's that?
Yeah, that's very interesting. Again, dribble is a loose word to explain the microorganisms that are there in our saliva and in our bodies. Oh. And one study in Sweden, for instance, looked at babies and parents who suck on the pacifier of the babies and then give it to them, and which is not a tradition we use in the U.S., of course.
That would be right.
But the children whose parents sucked on the pacifier tended to have less allergies. So the point was that this kind of relationship with the microorganisms or the microbiomes in our body actually helps us not develop the food allergies.
Well, you're talking about reasons why we can prevent food allergies, but yet the stats show they're actually increasing. And so why? What's behind that?
Great question. And that's because we are doing the reverse in our cultures.
The opposite, yeah.
Yeah, because we are actually being too clean and too free of germs, and which is good for not getting infections, but it's not that great for promoting harmony between the environment and us.
Natasha, what do you make of this? We're being too clean. Who would have thunk it, that being a problem?
That's something that it's like every parent's nightmare, right? Like you want to keep your kid clean, and we chase them around with sanitizer wipes and hand sanitizer all
Absolutely.
The time, and now we're actually seeing a consequence from it.
Yeah. And you wouldn't expect that.
No, you wouldn't expect that. But I think that what is happening is over the course of time, we're figuring out that might not be the best way to take care of our kids or our families. And so we can adapt what we do on a daily basis in order to accommodate for that new information.
So you young moms out there with new kids, let them outside in the backyard in the dirt and let them have at it. That's the theme of today's show here.
Eat some dirt.
Are there advances in testing for food allergies, Chitra, as you look at this?
Yes. We are used to doing blood testing for food allergies. A lot of practitioners out there are ordering blood tests, and I'm sure Natasha is doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Allergists do skin testing for food allergies. The great thing about testing for food allergies is that if it's negative, then it rules out the food allergy with a 95% chance. But if it's positive, it's kind of confusing. It's like the toss of a coin. It's a 50% chance of being positive or negative. And that's maddening because a lot of people get falsely labeled as having food allergies. There's a new type of test now called component testing, where you actually look at the part of the protein that might cause the reaction. So rather than looking at the whole peanut, you look at the anaphylactic part of peanut, and that's called component testing. The test is called, for instance, for peanut, is ERA-H2. So if that is high, you think the child may have a greater chance of a systemic reaction of the peanut, versus if ERA H8 or 9 are high, then it may be due to cross-reactive proteins with pollen that give you a little bit of itching and tingling around the mouth, but not the serious reactions.
Well, Natasha, it's awfully hard not to be, you know, overly concerned about all this, because I remember the first time when I was a young parent and a kid was coming over to play with one of my sons, and the mom was going on and on and on saying, you know, my son cannot eat this, he cannot eat that, and if he does, you know, all heck's going to break loose. And I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, I was just really wired, nervous about the prospect of a kid coming into my house who might fall over and have an anaphylactic shock here in 10 minutes.
No, and I think that's a really important point, because parents who have children who are suffering with significant food allergies need to be able to articulate effectively what the care plan is going to be just in case they get themselves into trouble. But I think an important part of that is to be able, as a community, to be able to learn about food allergy, even if your own child is not suffering from that, mm-hmm. so that we can understand how to include and welcome kids with food allergy into our normal daily lives so they don't feel like they're missing out.
Yeah. Let me get our listeners involved here. If you're a parent of a child with food allergies, you have questions about all this, this would be a great time to call. We have two terrific experts here. 816-235-2888 is our phone number, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date with your questions about food allergies. Chitra, one of the most well-known children's food allergies is that to peanuts. You have some new recommendations that will impact pediatricians, family practitioners, and parents and families. Tell us about that.
Yeah, there's a very couple of exciting studies that came out recently, and a lot of your listeners may have heard these studies. One is called the LEAP study that was done in UK that's learning about peanut introduction study. They followed about 640 infants in the UK to explore the question whether early introduction of peanut was a good thing or a bad thing.
And we learned
that early introduction actually helps reduce the incidence of peanut allergy, both as a primary prevention and secondary prevention, by as much as 80%.
Is there a practice in this country that, hey, if we try a young child with a peanut, and as Natasha was saying before, they have a slight reaction, we sort of go overboard and think, oh, they can never have a peanut again as long as they're in my household. And maybe what the doctor here is saying, Natasha, is we should be thinking differently about this.
Well, I think we need to really understand what true food allergy looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And when kids are exposed to a protein in a food that their immune system is violently reacting to, it's going to be a very violent reaction. Your body's trying to freak out and get rid of that protein.
Is it always a violent reaction, or can it be in the middle sometimes?
I think what parents are most fearful of are those very dramatic reactions where they're throwing up and they're having hives and they're having difficulty breathing and they're coughing. And although that doesn't happen commonly, it's something that's very serious that we all need to be aware of.
Mm-hmm. And what else should we be thinking about this? What else have we learned about this study that might have practical application to those of us with kids with food allergies?
This is actually a reversal of the current AAP recommendations that came out in 2000 that said strictly avoid or introduction of all allergenic foods. And in 2008, the AAP is now saying, go ahead and introduce it. And now the NIAID came up with recommendations saying, introduce it early, like 4 to 11 months of age, which is kind of a mindset change. So how do you introduce peanut? And do you have to introduce it every day? And do you have to introduce it for the rest of your
yes.
life? Those are the questions that are being explored. Some of the answers are try to introduce it early, maybe something like 2 grams per, which about 2 teaspoons or mm-hmm. so of the peanut butter or products. There are products that are coming up now, like peanut puffs that you can use and other things. And then a study called the LEAP-ON study showed that 1 year after stopping introduction of the peanut, this is 5 years after, they actually, and no, they ate no peanut, they actually were able to still sustain tolerance, which is kind of, you know, giving us hope that we can do something about preventing this rapid rise in peanut allergy.
I think it's important, too, to note that peanuts are a choking hazard. And that a lot of my parents ask, how do we introduce the peanut protein to a young child? We don't want kids eating a whole peanut until they can spell the word nut, N-U-T, which is usually
seriously,
about...
Seriously.
Yes.
That's your measuring stick.
Yes. So usually about the age of 4 or 5 is when we have them want them to have a whole nut. Until then, we use smooth peanut butter. There's peanut powder that you can buy at the supermarket. There's the peanut snacks, like she mentioned. So we have to keep in mind that we're not asking parents to give small children chokeable foods.
Yeah. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. We're talking food allergies. Dr. Dinakar, I recently read about a new study from researchers at Northwestern University who may have found a way to use nanoparticles to cure any allergy you can think of. Tell me again, what are nanoparticles and what's this study suggesting here?
So nano, as the word indicates, is very, very, very tiny.
Yes.
So it's a very tiny particle. It's so tiny that it can be camouflaged and covered by other proteins that the body will not be able to recognize. So you're able to introduce very tiny amounts of purified protein, the type of protein that will not cause an allergic reaction with the safety issues, but will still cause your immune system to change. Mm-hmm. So this study was done in mice, and we still have to follow up with studies in humans, but does show promise about how you can trick the immune system by, you know, entering into the body without being noticed and then actually cause immunological change.
Okay, let's go back to some phone calls here. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. We're talking food allergies, such a common problem for so many young kids and parents. Food allergies on the rise. We're talking about how to deal with it. Let's go to Angela from Oak Grove, Missouri. Angela, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. I was just wondering what your guest had to say about Red 40 or any type of food dyes in food. Used to make my son really aggressive almost when he was younger. And so we eliminated almost any Red 40 that he could take in. And I can take, you know, the discussion off the air.
Yeah, Angela, I'm really glad you called. Thank you. And what about red dye? What do we know about that?
That's a great question and something that a lot of my patients ask. People worry a lot about additives like red or yellow dye causing problems.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the symptoms that are mentioned relate to behavioral changes, aggressiveness, mood swings, but not really symptoms of allergy that we can test what we call IgE-mediated allergy, which are hives, rashes, vomiting, diarrhea.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, it's hard to test for those kinds of reactions because the actual tests we use for allergies are more for the typical life-threatening allergies.
Mm-hmm.
And what we typically tell the parents is to try and monitor the diet, see if it's related or not, and avoid it if they think there's a problem. But unfortunately, we are limited in our ability to test for that. And also, it's not life-threatening, so they don't have to worry about carrying an epinephrine auto-injector or those anaphylactic-type reactions.
Yeah. Natasha, can you give us a little sense here of the range of foods, the surprising foods that might cause allergies in kids, even in the course of your own practice, things that maybe you just hadn't anticipated at all as a doctor? You're scratching your head thinking, you're allergic to that, really?
Yeah, I think parents come in with a long list of different food allergies when their kids have different type symptoms that you mentioned before. I hear a lot about kiwi. I hear about a lot of oranges. I hear about strawberries. I hear about bananas. But I think
Are those things common, Doctor?
Yes, actually, it's very common. It's called oral allergy syndrome, and it's because
bananas?
Of cross. Yes, yes. Oh, kiwis, pineapples, mangoes. It's because of cross-reactive protein on the banana and the pollen, like birch or ragweed, that cause the reactions. Luckily, they're short-lived. You get itching and tingling. And interestingly, if you bake it, you can eat banana bread. No problem. You eat fresh banana during the season, you can have problems.
So some foods like peanuts can cause obviously severe reactions, and other foods you're saying like bananas, you can react to it, but typically it's not a violent reaction like we're talking about.
Exactly.
Here.
So that's very mild reactions around the mouth, itching, tingling, and transient, lasting few minutes. Patients may say, I don't want to eat it, or, you know, they may be able to eat it in cooked or canned form and be okay. And yes, you can get different types of reactions. You're absolutely right.
What other types of things, Natasha? I'm thinking, you know, furniture polish. I mean, you can be allergic to, but that's not a food allergy, obviously, but what other types of food allergies might you be?
Well, I think I've heard anything on the list, Steve. I mean, I think people come in when they're concerned about those issues. But I think what most parents are worried about are going to be your big eight, which is going to be your cow's milk, eggs, fish, peanuts, shellfish, soy, tree nuts, and wheat. And those are the ones that us as pediatricians are really trying to decrease the fear factor just a little bit so families will try them, but still keep a wise eye open in case there's a problem.
Okay. Let's go back to some phone calls here. Let's go to Jen from Overland Park. Jen, we're talking food allergies this morning on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, my son is allergic or sensitive to gluten, dairy, corn, food colorings, and we discovered this when he was about 6 months old.
Wow.
And through working, you know, for he's 12 now, and we've been working for years to kind of try to heal this and find our way through this. And the current theory is that I was given antibiotics during his birth, and so he basically had no healthy microbiome in his gut at birth, and so kind of had no fighting chance on the immune system side, and that it's leaky gut syndrome rather than technically an allergy. And so these kind of undigested proteins or foods leak through the gut wall and then cause an immune an immune response in the body. So that's just an interesting, you know, are we overusing antibiotics? And then secondarily, his reactions are both physical but also very much behavioral. When he was young, it was kind of colicky, and then it became, just kind of tantrums when he was exposed to foods, like this irrational behavior. And as he's gotten older, it's progressed towards like an ADD type of behavioral. So that's also, you know, this food coloring and how much is ADD related to diet? So that's what I have.
Yeah, thank you. Sorry you're having all these issues with your son, Jen. Let's go to Dr. Chitra Dinakar here about all this. Let's begin with the behavior and the reactions he's having with the attention deficit disorder issue. Dr. Dinakar, what about that?
That's I'm so sorry to hear about that. And I know it can be very frustrating to have behavior issues and try to find the cause for some of those issues. And we have looked at food allergies contributing to behavior issues, and here let me define the allergy means the presence of IgE antibody, which is the allergy antibody, and being able to pick it up on blood or skin testing and demonstrate a causal relationship, not the false positive that I said. And studies overall have not been able to find that link. Having said that, parents will come to me and tell me there are certain foods that make their child's behavior worse. And the recommendation then is to try and keep tabs on that those foods and modulate the amount you give them, not necessarily strictly avoid it, and see. The antibiotic thing I want to bring up links to my microbiome and the hygiene hypothesis. And yes, it has been thought that we are overusing antibiotics and that may be contributing, so I can understand that. The good news I have for the caller is that the leaky gut part is thought to be more of an infant reaction.
Ah.
So hopefully as a child is growing up,
he'll grow out of some
of this stuff. Yes.
Yeah, okay. Well, Jen, good luck again with your son. Let's go to Tay from Blue Springs. Tay, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Steve. I just wanted to ask the doctors about a problem I've struggled with my whole life. And my mother has the same issue. My younger brother developed it later into his adulthood, and my sister is recently developing it into her later adulthood. I have an intolerance to roughage fiber. And that's basically more of a self-diagnosis, but I worked in the medical field for 5 years and worked closely with a lot of doctors, and that's kind of the direction they led me, because most of my life I was told that it was like maybe pesticides, and I realized that I could eat frozen vegetables and fruits, I can eat canned fruits and vegetables, but a lot of fresh stuff other than cucumbers, I can eat tomatoes sometimes without having the ultimate result, which is usually emesis or hypervomiting when I yeah. ingest those types of fruits and vegetables.
Let me get a response here from Dr. Dinakar here. Tay, what about roughage and what might Tay be up against here?
I'm actually very happy Tay can eat frozen the vegetables in some form as a frozen, even if that's helping him, because the theories now suggest that fiber is actually sort of protective towards development of food allergy. So I'm happy he's able to eat that. I'm sorry to hear that these, you know, additional pesticides and stuff are causing a problem. And I would put that down to sensitivity rather than actual allergy. Hopefully he'll grow out of that too. And I keep my fingers crossed about that.
So even as an adult, there's a chance he could grow out of it at some point.
Yes, certainly. These things can take a while. And because it's not IgE mediated, but more of a sensitivity, he might become more tolerant over time.
Okay. And Tay's story, I think, really demonstrates what a lot of families go through is just a lot of experimentation and a lot of conversations with other family members of having those similar reactions in order to really pinpoint what the intolerance is. And that's an important communication to have with family and friends.
Anne from Lenexa. Anne, good morning.
Hi.
Go quickly if you would, Anne. I got about a minute left here.
Sure. I breastfed my daughter, and then I introduced some foods. The first dairy I introduced was actually yogurt, and she reacted so violently that where the yogurt even touched her, she hived up. My pediatrician said, stop feeding her, continue breastfeeding, reintroduce later. When we reintroduced it, she really didn't have any problems. I'm wondering if breastfeeding can help with allergies, and if a mother eats certain foods when she's breastfeeding, would that result in like building up a tolerance or causing an allergy?
Okay, breastfeeding, how important is it?
There's no question breastfeeding is very, very important and highly recommended as a pediatrician and an allergist. Initial studies actually suggest that breastfeeding was protective. Right now, we're not quite sure that it's protective or not, because maybe it's children with more allergies are actually the parents are breastfeeding, and there's a reverse causal mechanism that's confusing the issue. Regardless, I think breastfeeding is one of the greatest things a mother can give her child, and we highly recommend that. Eating the food that the mother does during breastfeeding doesn't really change things that much, is what we found, unfortunately. Otherwise, that would be a great chance for a cure, because it's more the environmental exposure and the exposure later that contributes to the food allergy.
Well, so many issues here with food allergies. I want to thank our two terrific experts here, Dr. Chitra Dinakar from Children's Mercy, Dr. Natasha Burgert with Pediatric Associates in Kansas City. Thanks for the great counsel, the great wisdom. We sure appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.